section of the John Gambling Show includes Mayor Michael Bloomberg here on a regular Friday basis. Mr. Mayor, hello and good morning.
Summer is here. Or yes.
Spring anyways.
Yeah.
Summer will be here shortly. Gorgeous weekend.
Bike race
on Sunday.
Absolutely. And the Kentucky Derby with a horse named after a bridge.
Right.
One of our bridges. So
Jerry Bossert, actually, my racing expert from the Daily News, he actually puts Verrazano third. He didn't pick him to win.
Any of these guys ever, I mean, I have a random shot. If there's 20 horses, you got one in 20 chance?
I think you need to have a pretty good record. Otherwise, I don't think you keep your job. It's not like the weather forecaster that can be wrong 90% of the time.
I was once in a box at a horse show many, many years ago, a race. And they had their own bookie right there who would give you advice. 10 races, not one.
It's a game that only those of that aren't faint at heart.
Well, sometimes you just put $2 on every horse, and then whoever wins, you take out that ticket and say, "See, I was smart enough. I knew it."
There you go. The race is on, as always. The race is on for mayor, and you've got a budget.
There, really?
Yes, there is. How many days left? I mean, I know you don't keep count.
We have a countdown clock. I think it says 2:42. Make every day count.
All right. The budget. You've looked at it one more time.
Yeah, budget is pretty much what we predicted in January. The only changes are minor. There's a little more revenue. There's a little more expense to eat it up. The press keeps getting confused. There is revenue that has come in at the end of 2012 in fiscal 2013, just to confuse you, that normally would have come in 2013, fiscal 2014.
Now I'm confused.
People sold their houses, businesses, stocks this past December so that they would qualify for the lower federal taxes, which went up January 1st.
Capital gains.
If you do that in December, then you pay your state and city taxes on it as well. So we got money then we normally would not have gotten until sometime during the next year. And people say, oh, you've got all this extra revenue. No. On the top line, it shows we have the extra revenue. On the bottom line, it shows we moved it into next year, which is where we're going to need it to pay the bills. So it didn't change anything. We did postpone a little bit of anticipated revenue from taxi medallions, like everything with taxis. It's the courts. These people are crazy. All they do is go to court. And we've got to do something about our court system because they just stop everything.
Everything gets stopped. Everything the city does seems to get challenged.
Every single thing. You can't run a railroad this way. And, you know, I'm sympathetic to the judges supposed to determine the law, but you just can't let using the courts as a process to stop things rather than a process to really find out what the law is. And that's unfortunately the direction we've gone, and they just kept delay. Anyways, we assumed we were going to get some revenue in 2014 from these medallions. We've moved that to 2015. Still think we'll get it, but so that's a little bit, you don't have the money next year for that. But then the critics were complaining we were doing it with one-shots anyways. I don't see any of them saying, oh, isn't that wonderful? They didn't have the one-shot. It is a one-shot. Everything we do is a one-shot, you know? A little bit more expenses here and a little bit, just a few things. Pension costs keep going up. Pension costs are going to bankrupt us. We've saved $6.5 billion with all of these programs to eliminate the gap. Cuts in every agency.
That is a universal problem in the United States.
But it's worse in New York City because the Governor Cuomo, in all fairness to him, did force, cajole, negotiate, whatever, somehow or other. He got the state unions to have a copay on their health insurance. In the private sector, 90% of all American workers have copay. New York City, only 5% of our employees have copay. And the reason copay is important, not that the employee picks up a big percentage of the cost, because they really don't. It is that they think twice before they use one of the services. And that's what you want. You don't want people just to, I'll get a checkup just for the hell of it, or I'll do this. Do it when it makes some sense. And when there's a medical reason or an annual checkup makes a lot of sense, that sort of thing. And if you don't have copay, you don't do it because you don't have any skin in the game, if you will. If you have to think about, well, I'm going to reach for my pocket, it'll be $20. It's only $20. But it's $20. It's my money. And then all of a sudden you behave. And all the studies show that. That's why in the private sector, 90% of copay. That's why the governor now has 90% of the state workers doing.
Is it that
doing.
Simple? Is it as simple no, yeah. as copay? To solve, well, one of, to slow, no. slow your problem?
It would make a difference. I mean, everything. There's no... You know, the real, if you didn't have employees, you wouldn't have the problem. But we need employees. That's our job, is to hire people to provide services. If you take a look at the city budget in city funds, it's virtually all, everything we have is goes to salaries, pension, and health care benefits, because we provide those kind of services that people provide. And you want that. Our cops, firefighters, teachers, et cetera, sanitation, corrections, whatever. And, you know, they want to get paid more, and that's fine. I understand that. But it would be if we could, if our health care costs are so out of line with everybody else's, then maybe there really is something wrong.
And this is a very complicated question, and we don't have a lot of time, but is there a solution to the pension problem, the universal pension problem?
Yeah.
Or just eliminate it?
No. People want pensions. The basic solution would be we have a system where Albany votes the pensions and the city pays.
Have the people who pay make the rules.
Or have the people who make the rules pay would be the way I'd phrase that. But yes, you're exactly right. It just doesn't make any sense because we negotiate with the unions on salaries, but pensions we don't negotiate because Albany's going to do what it's going to do. And you could get the unions to make a grand bargain. They would be happy to take a raise and agree to lower pensions and health care. Why? Because as soon as they get the raise, they know Albany's going to give it all back to them.
Yeah, exactly.
So. Yeah, and I'm not knocking out. Look, I think my experience in 11 and a half years is I have never seen a workforce as good as ours in the private sector. There's some, you know, people who aren't great. There's some people who are crooks. There's some people this. We have 280,000 employees. They all can't be perfect, but on average, the city is very well served, and the unions are actually very cooperative. One sort of a lot less, but that's okay. And they've been getting raises all through this period. People keep saying, oh, they don't have contracts. The Taylor Law extends every contract. So they do have a contract in force. We have to obey by all of the contract rules from the last contract, all of the agreements. And people say we don't have a contract. If they don't have a contract, why do we have to obey? We have to follow those things because the Taylor Law simply says you can't strike and the city can't lock you out, have to continue. And so teachers, for example, which on average get 3.8% increase every single year, they've gotten all that through the last 10 years, the last 2 or 3 years, even when they say they didn't have a contract. The average city employee gets something like 3%, even though nobody's got a new contract. The old contracts are still there. And the teachers' union, they made a bet. They gambled that they could get more or lie to their members, really, or I guess misrepresent to their members, that they got more than the other unions. That's the union management wanted to. And so they moved the date when it was time to talk about things, which turned out to be after the mortgage crisis. Every other union was before the mortgage crisis. They made a bet, and they lost. And by the time they came around, it was after the mortgage crisis. The city just didn't have the money. The city can't pay for monies it doesn't have. And some of these people say, oh, well, we're going to get big retroactive raises, or I'm not going to vote for that mayoral candidate. If you gave big retroactive raises, you would have to increase property taxes 50%. Stay tuned next year. You never know. I did not think it was going to happen. And then somebody yesterday said to me, well, you know, the city council is very liberal and it's going to be a lot more liberal after this next election. And who knows who the speaker is going to be. This Chris Quinn has done a very good job as speaker. Whether you're going to vote for her or not, she has been a very good speaker. The city has been very well served by her. And I don't think she gets enough credit for it. The press goes on to her about member items or whatever we call them, and each level of government has them. Number one, that's the way you manage a legislative body. And number two, that gets you down to granular to get services at the local level, which is we should, and it's not a lot of money, and we don't waste any of it. We check every single thing. She's gotten beaten up on that, and that's just totally unfair. But just generally, she has done a good job.
All right, Mayor Michael Bloomberg. And, of course, you'll have an opportunity to ask the questions before we finish. 800-321-0710 here on the John Gambling. Mayor Michael Bloomberg here with me, John Gambling. And also, Deputy Mayor Cass Holloway is here.
Cass is here, and his twin brother was in yesterday. Looks identical. I don't know how the parents told the difference.
having identical right. twins,
he,
I know
he
the
is
challenge.
He's a screenwriter, right?
That's right.
And Cass doesn't do anything important other than is the deputy mayor for operations of the city. So if everything works in the city, I take the credit. If it doesn't, we dump on Cass.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
The most thankless job in New York City.
The reason he's here, you can ask why. Because we are putting out what we call Hurricane Sandy After Action Report, 70-odd pages. Kaz and Linda Gibbs, who's the deputy mayor for all our social services, have spent 3 months. They've come up with 60 recommendations and responses. You know, we said at hurricane time we would spend some time and do in-depth and figure out what we did well, what we could have done better, what we will have ready for the next time if similar kind of things happen. I mean, everybody announces these things, but we actually do them. And this plan, it is, you'll shake your head and say, how could anybody do this on a scholarly work? And they're concrete things that we should do in the city and practical things to help the city.
All right, let's, Cass, can you tick off some of those?
Sure. Well, we have 60 recommendations that fall into six categories. They cover communications, evacuation, public safety, sheltering, logistics and infrastructure, and what we call community recovery. And they range from the very specific. So, for example, recommendation 12 is buy more light towers and boats for the police and fire department, to more general. So we need to do a better job doing data collection from the utilities and making sure that our data across city agencies is integrated, gives you better situational awareness. And then to recommendations that say we need to add some playbooks, what we call playbooks or action plans, to the existing coastal storm plan.
So people know what to do when they run into this situation.
Well, one of the recommendations is to strengthen our communications and make sure people know that when a storm is coming, that it's very serious. We did a survey of about 500 people in the flood zone and asked them some basic questions. Did you know the storm was coming? Did you evacuate? Who did you hear it from?
And what? Give me an example of answers. Did they know the storm was coming?
The overwhelming majority knew the storm was coming. We had a 60-odd percent who evacuated. A quarter of from where they heard it from, about 25% said they heard it from an elected official. That was overwhelmingly where most people heard it from. Then it's like 10 other sources. And people say, as a general matter, about 30% of people said that whether or not they evacuated during Hurricane Irene, for example, influenced their decision to evacuate during Sandy.
There is some benefit from Irene before Sandy.
Well, you know, somebody once said a crisis is too important to waste. You want to make sure you learn something and you teach people. That is one of the reasons, John, why you got to be very careful in not crying wolf. Because if you say evacuate and it turns out the storm goes elsewhere, and listen, that's going to happen. I mean, weather forecasting's an art, not a science. But if it happens, you really are in trouble because the next time people won't evacuate. And that's the way people work.
Cass,
you and me too.
There was a lot of talk right after Sandy with the devastation of the transportation system and the like about preventative actions, waterproof doors, whatever it might be of electrical systems and the like. What do you see as the answer in that department?
Well, so the main focus of this report is the immediate planning before an event like a coastal storm and then the response. What are the resources you have that you can deploy on the ground? And then once the storm has passed, how do you make sure you get to people, get the services that they need and so forth? And so there are some resources and things that we need to do. There's another report that's in the works that is going to be the city's look forward for resilience. But I'll give you one example. In this report, we've already put $30 million in the capital budget to strengthen 311 to make sure that we have redundant lines that come from a different center so that we don't rely on one place.
You've got the backup.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, what we found things in retrospect when we had the blackout, southern end of Manhattan, the police and along the coast, Staten Island, Breezy, Rockaways, Coney Island, when the cops wanted to light the streets, because when the streets lights are off, then you have more of a chance of crime. When the street lights are on, you don't. So it's a good preventive measure. There weren't enough of these generators with, you see them standing, that little box on
that's
wheels.
That's what you meant by the light poles.
Right, yes. Okay. And also, we eventually found more. But, the sanitation department had some, and then there was a private contractor that had some, and there was some in California and that sort of thing. If you had a list of where they all were, you could pull it together faster. Or maybe we should invest and have more sitting there in storage so we can get to them. It's those kinds of things that I think the response was phenomenal. But you can always do everything better. And if we just sit there and say it was perfect and not plan for the future, shame on us. Now, will the next administration take this and carry out these things and get ready and perform better? I hope so. I'm going to be living in this city, so I want the next administration to be better, and I want to make sure we gave them the information of what we learned. But unfortunately, after storms like this, everybody's out there with a plan. Everybody's out there with proposals. And then you sit there, and people are frustrated because they never appear. I'd like to make sure that that does not happen with our administration. We said we'd get people back with heat, hot water, and electricity. CAS put together, I think it was 8 contractors from around the country. They came here. They brought in plumbers and carpenters and electricians, and we put new electric panels, new hot water heater, and new space heaters in something like 20,000 housing units in 2 months. FEMA paid for the whole thing. You didn't even have to do paperwork. We just walked in, did it, and God bless. And FEMA said they've never seen anything like that. Nobody's ever done that before. But we now have a blueprint. So the next time there is a disaster, which won't be the same kind of disaster in the same place, it'll be different. They all are different. But at least people will know where the resources are and how we responded. And some of what we did would be applicable to the next disaster.
All right. Well, you've got you're a busy man. I'm sure there's never a rested moment.
Hope not. That's what we pay him for.
They pay him the big bucks.
And he gets health care plan, too, and pension.
The whole 9 yards.
Whole 9 yards.
Cass Holloway, good to see you here. Thanks for coming in this morning. Mr. Mayor, let me take a break right here. 8:33 is my time, and time for Joe Bartlett. Forward to your calls with the mayor. Questions 800-321-0710. Mr. Mayor, employment numbers 165 for April.
Market seems to say they're good. The private sector growth is private sector is adding jobs. Public sector, because of sequestering and because of just budget problems in states and city around the country, government jobs are going down. Now there are people that think that's good. But they don't work in the government.
I was going to say, I'm one of those people.
Right.
But I don't work for the government. But
you still want the services, right?
Of course. Everybody does.
This year in New York City, last year we had a record low crime, like a murder rate, which when Giuliani came into office a little bit before then, actually was sort of like the middle of the Dinkins term. It had been building up during Koch. Dinkins came in at the wrong time. Everybody blames David for it, but he just came in really at the top. And then it started to go down. Giuliani really brought the murder rate down dramatically from 2,300, 2,200. When Rudy left, it was 500, something like that. Last year, it was 419. This year, we're 35% below that. We are something like 56% lower than when we came in a decade ago. And there's something like 7,300 murders that you would have had you had the murder rate when we came into office as opposed to what we've actually done. If that doesn't make you happy, I don't know what does.
You had a very strong speech at the police department.
Yeah, I
went
to talk to the, ostensibly to say thank you, which I did, to the all the brass in the police department, but to use it as a forum to say to the public, this is not a slam dunk. You've got to constantly work every day. We've got to make sure that we have the backs, as I phrase it, of our police officers. There are two bills in the city council which would be disastrous. One would split the responsibility. The police commissioner would be the commissioner, but there'd be an inspector general answering to the city council. And everybody says, oh, he's not going to set policy or she's not going to. You have two cops. Bullets start flying. They both have to be working for the same boss. They both have to have the same policies. And without that, you just have a disaster. And Bob Morgenthau, who was the district attorney in Manhattan, wrote a great op-ed piece today in the Wall Street Journal. And the headline was the PD already has layers of oversight. And we do this four or so. We have all the district attorneys. You have internal and external organizations that supervise the police department. And another one, particularly the way it's structured, would just lead to chaos. And you just, people say, well, they'll still be able to do their job. That may be, but I don't want to run that risk. You're playing with people's lives here. And if we say, all right, well, let's see what happens. We'll do it. Murder rate spikes up. Okay, let's go back. What about the people murdered during that time? And then there's another bill, which I talked about on my radio show it's recorded for Sunday, where you can't use the things that would normally be used to identify a suspect. So if the way I phrased it, this is a white 17-year-old male with a blue scarf, the only thing you could look at was the scarf, which means we've got to stop a lot of elderly black females who are wearing blue scarfs because you have to do everybody. And that doesn't make any sense. And but worse, if it turns out that you find a white male young guy with a blue scarf, it fits the description from a witness of a crime. And then it turns out that person didn't do the crime. And the cop's just asking. He's supposed to stop people to find him. How else are you going to find crooks? That person can sue the city, and the city has to prove that it did not look at the fact that he was young and male and white.
You were told you
every
can't
cop
do that.
Every cop is going to be subject to going to court every time. If you're a tort lawyer, all you do is send the city a letter. Just send me the check. Don't waste your time. Go into court. You can't possibly win. And we'll settle for X dollars. And it'll be one of the great scams. But your cops are either they're going to be in court all the time.
Or they don't do their job.
Or they don't do their job. Right. I mean, both these bills are very dangerous bills. And you'd say, well, you know, given the great success we've had, we are the role model for the world. Certainly for the country, because the rest of the world doesn't have similar kind of problems, different kind of crime or no crime or whatever, more crime, depending. But how could you have this when it's the most successful thing the city's ever done and you are protecting people's lives? And I talked in my talk about a kid up in the Bronx, 17 years old, nice young kid, standing there, bullets start flying. He wasn't the intended victim. He had nothing to do with it. Dead. And that's the sad thing is that so many minority kids, males, young, are getting shot. That's where the crime is. And we have to do something about it. That's why I got George Soros to give us $30 million, why I put $30 million my foundation in. We got the city to put in 60. We have these programs trying to work with young kids. We incarcerate a third fewer people than we did before. Because if you send the kid to jail, I know there's a risk of leaving him out, but if you send him to jail, he's going to learn how to rape, pillage, murder a lot worse. And his only contacts after that are going to be with bad guys. He'll lose all his contacts to the extent that they existed with his family.
It's a relatively new program. Any indication?
No, we've been doing it for 10 years. That's one of the reasons crimes come down, because we are not creating new criminals. The kid does something wrong. Let's say he holds up a store. Nobody's suggesting that that should be legal or that he shouldn't be punished. But he's not going to jail for the rest of his life. Nobody thinks we couldn't afford to do it, and nobody thinks that would be fair. So do you make him worse, or do you try to find some other ways to punish him without making him worse? And that's what we've been focusing on. And so Rikers Island today has, our jail system has 14,000 prisoners, and a decade ago it was 21,000. It's a third down. And I think that one of the reasons, a lot of other reasons too, the job that the PD under Kelly's doing is phenomenal, but we are creating fewer bad guys. And you should see a constant reduction in the crime rate over the 10 years as you do that. And that's, in fact, what happened. You're speechless.
Yeah, I was speechless because I was being talked to in my ear.
Oh, okay.
But I apologize.
You know, society says, let's throw the kid in jail and throw away the key. That may make you feel good, but you are just going to create somebody that's going to create more havoc on society. And if the kid used the gun and tried to shot somebody, yeah, you have to protect the public. But we don't correct in the sense, we call it the corrections department. Fundamentally, if a kid goes to jail and comes out afterwards, the odds are that he's going to do worse things when he gets out. And so a lot of the crazies who say lock him up and throw away the key, number one, they don't want to pay the taxes to lock him up. That's what's happening in California. The jails, they put everybody in jail and nobody can afford it.
They're so, letting them out.
Yeah, I mean, you have to have practical answers. There's no simple solutions to complex problems. And yes, there's crime and there's no easy ways to solve it. But we keep bringing down the murder rate, the shooting rate, and everything else. And I also pointed out in that talk, the New York City Police Department last year, I think, shot 9 people. You know, it was a gun battle. Somebody pulls a gun, cop pulls a gun. If you had the murder, the cop shooting rate of Chicago, it would have been 70 people. We only did 9. And we have the police department is not only are the results there, but the discipline and the training is so superior to any place else. And you see that. That's one of the numbers that you would look at to see whether or not they're well-led and trained and disciplined and that sort of thing. And it's there. And so to try to destroy the system, and they say, oh, we're not destroying it. We're just going to fix it. We're going to make it better. Yeah, right. Well, these people who know nothing about
crime. Some of the people that want your job, we're not listening to you.
People that know about crime. Here, Bob Morgenthau. Maybe you should listen to him.
All right, Mr. Mayor. Sit tight. We've got some people on the telephone. 800-321-0710. I see an empty line. If you grab your headphone right there. Let's get to our telephone.
Let's go.
Let's go indeed. We're going to start with Harry. Harry, you've got a question for the mayor.
I do, sir. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Mayor, could the city establish what I'll call a court watch list on its website or a private website listing all the legal actions against these initiatives that your administration has come up with that have been in which public officials are involved as plaintiffs, and perhaps include a link to the campaign donor website. So, for example, people would know that Bill de Blasio receives lots of contributions from the taxpayers.
Well, Harry, number one, I think it's a phenomenal idea, and people have tried to do some of it. Having the list of the court actions that the public can see, and who's behind them, I don't know. The problem is if somebody gets a campaign donation, it comes from Joe Smith. Who is Joe Smith? You'd have to go and do a lot of research to find out that Joe Smith is the owner or the president of the company or a lobbyist representing so-and-so. And so it's very hard to tell. What I've always thought in Congress, they do it more so than at the state and city, they pass what they call an omnibus bill. And it has 50 different totally unrelated things in it. But it lets you vote for some of the stuff. And when the other stuff you're not in favor of, you can say, well, we had to get the omnibus bill done because, for example, that's money to pay the troops. And I didn't like that fact, that subsidy for that one industry. I don't know why Congressman or Senator so-and-so put it in, but I had to vote for this, and it gives them cover. And the reason you want to do that is because you want your crazy bill in there as well and take care of your friends. And so it's a great idea, but it's hard to do.
All right, Harry, thank you very much for that. Let's go to Alan. Alan, your question for the mayor.
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, I live in Brighton Beach and listening to Christie all the time, Governor Christie of New Jersey, all the plans they're doing for the shorefront in New Jersey. Any plans for Coney Island, Brighton Beach, Manhattan Beach area?
Oh, we're doing, we've spent a fortune and keep doing it. You go out there. We're getting criticized for working nights because we're working 24/7 to get sand back on the beaches, to have comfort stations. The boardwalks won't be back until the end of the season, but we're working on it and all sorts of stuff, and also trying to work to make sure that people know the next time what to do and that sort of thing. But I don't know anything New Jersey's doing that we're doing. I don't know what they're doing. Everybody's got plans. If you can go down the beach and you'll see it, and the beaches are going
to
be open.
I think Alan might be referring to the dune, making dunes.
Yeah, we're doing all of that. You know, it depends on the storm. Anyways, so we're doing it.
All right, Alan, thank you very much.
That's
Let's
number
go
six.
To, you want to go to number six?
Sure.
We'll do number six. That's Alex. Alex, your question.
Oh, yes. No, actually, I want to comment that during the Dinkins administration, I've been an outside salesman for 50 years. I'm still working. And during the Dinkins years, when you went to the theater district, where I remember when my wife and my daughter, we were actually afraid because there were people in doorways between parked cars, just walking from the parking lot to the theater was like, you just didn't want to go in the city at that time. And I just hope they just keep the stop and frisk going, because I think that's...
Well, Alex, listen, the city's a lot better, and there are a lot of people, our administration, the previous administration, even Dinkins, you know, in the middle of his administration, he brought in Ray Kelly, and that's when the crime started to go down. He gets beaten up a little more than I think he should, but Rudy's administration made enormous change, and so has ours, and we just got to make sure we keep going it, and thank you for the call.
All right, Joe, your question for the mayor.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning.
First of all, thank you for all you've done for the greatest city.
Well, you're nice to say so.
My concern is my daughter goes to a New York City public middle school.
Okay.
And they never allow the children out of the building for recess. I questioned it, and I was told that that's a school, seems to be their own school policy.
Joe,
I
tell you what.
I reached out to the district, I reached out to the DOE, and I can't seem to get an answer.
Okay, we will get you an answer. I don't know. It doesn't sound right, but let me get you an answer. Stay on. And we'll get your name and phone number, and we will talk to the Department of Education and get back to you by Monday, let's say, if maybe today, but if not by Monday.
All right. Yeah, now that's so important. We have so little of it. The kids of today, they're sitting in front of the computers. They got to get outside.
Yeah, I mean, exercise is great for you. Keep in mind, there was a big article in the Wall Street Journal, I think, last Monday. Lots of kids across the country are now having heart attacks. Because they're drinking, they describe as full sugar drinks, John. You can laugh about it all you want. And then the Post, which was nasty about the nanny gate and that sort of stuff, their big story of the week was this 300-pound woman, and you sort of saw the backside, and obesity is going to bankrupt us. It's going to take over the whole system. And it's not exercise. Exercise is good, but you could not exercise enough to work off a big meal. You just have to stop eating.
Have yourself a good weekend.
You
There'll be some bicycle exercising over the weekend on Sunday with the 5 Borough. We've got more here on the John Gambling Show, 9 o'clock.